And away we go. Hello, everybody. The thus named Bill Buckmaster with you, host of The Buckmaster Show, along with producer-engineer Tom Fairbanks. Tom, today is All Souls Day, a day of reflection and prayer for the dearly departed, today being Wednesday, November the 2nd, 2022. And for the dearly departed, a lot of us think of them not just on All Souls Day, but every day.
Dia de los Muertos?
Yeah, also known as Day of the Dead.
But, it has been brought to my attention that it's as much a day of
celebration
as it's not morbid, in other
words.
No,
it is not. It's actually very festive, which I think is a good thing. Buckmaster in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. The radio station is 1030 KVOI, Tucson's voice for trusted news and talk. We have our worldwide live listening. That means our live broadcasts of the program on my website, buckmastershow.com. We piggyback the live feed from kvoi.com. When we do our telephone interviews, which we will do right at the top of the show today, our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Without further ado, I introduce Tucson City Councilman, Democrat, Ward 6 Democrat, Councilman Steve Kasacha. Councilman, how are you?
I'm doing well, and piggybacking on your opening about All Souls Day, people should be aware that from about 3 p.m. On Sunday, this coming Sunday, until about midnight, there are going to be several street closures, largely in the downtown area and on the west side, Grande and Speedway and St. Mary's, Congress and Cushing, that area. So this Sunday from 3 p.m. until midnight to take care of the All Souls procession.
That thing has really grown, hasn't it? Do you have any idea how many years it's been going on now? Just a rough estimate.
I don't know. I would be hazarding a guess, but I know you're right. It continues to grow. We had issues when the streetcar went in, and that's the reason they had to change the route, because a lot of those, I don't want to call them floats, but a lot of the displays were going to conflict with the catenary lines from the streetcar, so we had to move it. But no, it's going. It ends up on the west side, bonfire, and all the festivities. So You're both right that it is a celebration. It's not a morose kind of a thing, and it's really celebrating the loved ones that we lost. And God knows, in the last 3 years through COVID, we've lost thousands.
Yeah, we really have. So a day of reflection and celebration right up and through the activities planned in downtown Tucson on Sunday. There are some changes coming to the Tucson City Council wards. The boundary lines are being changed a little bit. We do have an election next year. Voters will be choosing a mayor and three city council members, Ward 1, 2, and 4. Why is this necessary, and do you expect any big changes?
Well, it's necessary for a couple of reasons. First of all, we're required by statute to realign our ward boundaries within a certain period of time after the 10-year the census. So we're within that window now. We have to get it done. That's by statute. There's another some of the criteria involved include trying to make sure that the disparity in population between wards is no greater than 10%, and right now between some of them it's about 13%. And another one of the goals is to try and eliminate split precincts, legislative precincts. So to your question, do you expect any grand changes? Probably not. There will be several tweaks, I would call them, but there's not going to be any kind of major changes. Now, if you're in one of the neighborhoods that is getting moved from, say, Ward 6 to Ward 3 or Ward 5, then you will want to weigh in. And there's a public hearing Thursday, tomorrow, down at the council chambers that people should take part in. And they can go online at the clerk's website right now and look at the proposed changes. And if you've got objections, then go down and share them. But no huge changes, unless, of course, you're one of the neighborhoods who's being moved from one ward to another. And you're right, and some of this will be implicated in next year's election. Some of the changes that I've seen being proposed anyway will affect wards 1, doing it by memory and by kind of my mind's eye, 1, 2, and 4. Yeah, they're all implicated.
Mm. And that meeting at the hearing at the council chambers gets underway tomorrow at 5:30 in the afternoon,
right,
if anyone is interested. You made a proposal. It was agreed upon by the council concerning the RTA delaying 2 of the RTA projects. Can you kind of boil this down in a, you can get really deep in the weeds here on this, but could you kind of give us the bottom line here?
Yeah, I'll give a high level, 30,000 foot view. We are coming up on the end of the RTA.
Right.
It sunsets in 2026. In anticipation of that, the RTA is right now trying to finalize some of their projects. About $150 million of those projects are City of Tucson projects that they do not have the funding for. And so the conversation is, what do we, the RTA, do with those projects if we can't fund them? Where do we come up with the dollars? And what we just voted on last Tuesday was to agree to temporarily delay, not cancel, but temporarily delay about $150 million worth of projects to help the RTA get on their feet in terms of finances and figure out where they're going to come up with those dollars. Now, some of the conversation revolves around pushing those projects and a couple of other ones from other jurisdictions into the next RTA, and that's the one that would be voted on whenever it goes back to the ballot, and there's some talk about doing that around 2024, a couple of years ahead of the sunset of the first one. So that's the conversation, is how do they fund what they don't have the money for now, and where do they go in the meantime, where the projects go. I will say that I have some serious concerns about RTA Next, the next go-around. The RTA went out and asked each of the jurisdictions, and there are 8 jurisdictions with projects. There are actually 9 in the RTA, but ADOT doesn't have projects that are funded by the RTA. So all those 8 jurisdictions were asked to provide $600 million worth of projects, and we throw them all in the pot, and the RTA is chiseling those down so to a manageable, in quotes, manageable level, and they anticipate coming out with about $1 billion worth of projects among the jurisdictions that would be paid for over the next 20 years. We just saw this play, and this would be Act 2, and what we're seeing right now is that they ran out of money. Now, that's not a huge criticism of the RTA. It's a reflection of the reality that there was a recession. Many, many people believe that we're going to see another recession if we're not already in one in the next 2 decades. And I think that's a reasonable assumption, that the economy is not going to continue on an upward trajectory for 20 consecutive years. Plus, there is the obvious concern over inflation. We are seeing cost escalation in terms of both labor and materials. And right now, the RTA is pushing back against covering inflationary costs on our remaining projects compared to what was on the 2006 ballot. So what I have said to the council, to the mayor, and to the city manager and our representatives on the RTA is that if I had to vote today, I would not support the RTA Next, because I think it's a Ponzi scheme. It is, if you get in early and your projects are done at the front end of the proposal, of the front end of the 20 years, you're going to get them covered. But if you're at the back end, like what we are now, we're setting up other mayors and councils 15 years from now from having this exact same conversation about what do we do with the projects, where do we come up with the money, how do we fix it. There is a value to regional collaboration, obviously. I'm not suggesting that we disband the RTA, but the way it's being framed right now, I think, is setting other mayors and councils up in all these 9 jurisdictions for failure in 10 or 15 years. I think that a couple things need to happen. Number one, they need to recognize that inflation is real, and so scale back the number of projects that they're putting on the ballot so that they can have a realistic way to cover inflation in 10 or 15 or 20 years. So scaling back the projects, covering inflation. They also have to include road repair. They can no longer continue to go in and simply build more roads and assume that the cost of maintenance is something the jurisdictions are going to pick up. And the other thing is that right now they are projecting about $2.1 billion over the next 20 years, and they have $1 billion of that for the roadway projects. My suggestion to them is and has been that they push some of the dollars right now that they've got allocated for transit and for the environment and for safety considerations, put those into the roadway projects, because that's where the high dollar amounts are going to be. And so pivot some of the money, maybe put $1.5 billion into roadway and cut down some of the other categorical projects. So that's about as 30,000 feet as I can get. But
okay.
The RTA is in trouble right now in terms of RTA Next, in terms of funding and timing for going to the ballot.
But it sounds like you would be very, if some of these changes were made, you'd be very open to it.
Open to the conversation. I've already had a brief conversation with Ted Maxwell, who is the Department ADOT representative, absolute quality guy.
Yeah.
Ted and I have had some conversations about it already. I've reached out to Rex Scott. He's the county representative. And obviously we've had conversations around the council table. But as it stands right now, it does not make sense to put what they have on the ballot. But that does not mean that we can't make changes between now and the time it goes
sure,
to the voters.
There is time. Houghton Road from Broadway to Tanca Verde Road and 22nd Street from I-10 to Keno Parkway are the two major road improvement projects that would be delayed. Let's pause right here, Councilman, and talk a little bit about upcoming Thanksgiving. Hard to believe, Steve Kasachek, three weeks from tomorrow, we'll be sitting down and giving thanks around the table for our Thanksgiving dinner. And lots of people in this area will have dinner rolls on the table. And for dessert, they'll have pies from you know where, don't you, Steve?
Yep, Monas.
Monas.
And they better be jacking their inventory up, because people are going to be flocking to their place.
And they did last year. They had a record, hundreds and hundreds of people ordering pies. I mean, the pie containers, I went in there the Sunday before that Thanksgiving. They had these containers, these cardboard containers all over the place. There were hundreds of.
Sure.
So put in your order right now. If you had to, you're a pumpkin pie guy or no? Is it fruit
pie? Pumpkin, apple, cherry, you
there.
Name it.
Okay.
Yeah, if it's round with stuff inside of it, I'm all over it.
All right. Monasdanishbakery.com is their website. Give them a call. Make your order now. Get in ahead of the rush. Open right now for lunch. Open for breakfast. 6:30 Tuesday through Saturday. 7 on Sunday morning. They are taking Monday off, a well-deserved day off. More with Steve Kasachek right after this. Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Delivering a $2 billion voter-approved regional transportation plan involves complex policy, legal, and financial matters. The Regional Transportation Authority is open to answering any questions you have about delivery of the current RTA 20-year plan or about the development of a new regional transportation plan for the next 20 years. Contact the RTA at info@rtamobility.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show midweek edition on this November 2nd. We continue now with our conversation with Tucson City Councilman Steve Kasachek. And Tom and I were just reflecting a little bit about Thanksgiving. We really do have a lot to be thankful for in this community. Would you agree with that, Councilman?
100%.
Of course, people always say, well, we're thankful for the weather, but it goes a lot further than that, doesn't it?
Oh, 100%. So I can just tell you that in today, just setting aside, you know, the weather and all that, I've had people come in giving donations for migrants. We gave out a sewing machine and a couple of rugs for Afghan refugees. I've got two emails, from some people from Ukraine who are relocating here from that. So you consider the conditions people are living in Venezuela, in Cuba, Nicaragua, Afghanistan, Ukraine right now, and then walk outside and the beauty and the safety and the, you know, just the conditions that we have here. Absolutely, we have a lot to be thankful for in this community.
Our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management, and Chuck has called us with a comment and a question for Steve Kasachek. Go ahead, Chuck.
Thank you, Councilman Kasachek. I would like you to comment on the proposal, I believe, made by the city and maybe the county too, for the RTA to expend monies to buy golf carts and personnel to get them because of the unsafe conditions downtown. And the cost of that is going to be, you know, $500,000. I would just like to know why. Thank you.
I have no idea, Chuck, what you're talking about.
I don't either. I don't know.
RTA spending $500,000 for golf carts downtown? Yeah. That is the first time I've ever heard anything like that.
Yes. Yes, sir.
Never heard about that.
Okay.
I will look into it, but that does not sound like anything at all that the RTA would be funding. Now, you might be talking about the DTP, the Downtown Tucson Partnership, spending some money on golf carts
that
for
could
transporting
be.
People
yep.
around downtown.
Mm-hmm.
You might be talking about Rio Nuevo kicking some cash in for transporting people in for around downtown events. But that is not an RTA function. I can't even imagine them doing that.
There was an affordable housing roundtable yesterday hosted by the mayor, United Way, and some other additional stakeholders. This is such a challenge, affordable housing in these inflationary times. Very difficult subject.
It's a hugely complex topic, too. And so there are several moving pieces to it. We have our hands tied by the state legislature in terms of our ability to control rent escalation. There is a state prohibition on rent controls in Arizona. One of the fallout implications of that is that we are getting a lot of out-of-state investors, people coming here with their dollars from, for instance, California, where they do have rent control opportunities at the local level. And so people are coming here and putting their money in mid-range apartment complexes, slapping a fresh coat of paint on and maybe throwing a new carpet in and jacking the rents up 40 or 50%. That makes that particular apartment just unaffordable for people who are on fixed incomes. One of the fastest growing demographics of homeless population right now in the city of Tucson, in Pima County too, and I'll pivot to that in a second, are seniors. I was on the phone with Gene Fedigan, who is the director of Sister Jose. Sister Jose is a homeless shelter for women. And she and I were securing housing just last week for a 78-year-old woman and a 75-year-old woman. First-time homeless. These are not chronically homeless people that we're talking about with serious mental illnesses or drug addictions or any of that. These are women who were simply priced out of their apartments, and they were on a fixed income. That is a huge problem in this community right now, is senior homelessness. The housing affordability is a challenge. We tried to get our arms for everybody in the region. We had tried to get our arms around a piece of it with an ordinance that I proposed and we adopted 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, I want to say, called income source discrimination. And that simply says that if you are a landlord, you may not choose to refuse to lease to somebody solely based on the source of their income. That could be veterans benefits, it could be Social Security, it could be our housing choice vouchers, Section 8. We were seeing landlords who were saying, I'm not gonna rent to people anymore on fixed incomes, and in particular Section 8, because I can jack the rents up and I can get more money out of other people. So there are limits to what we can afford to put people in under Section 8. So that's not going to solve it. It's going to keep some people housed. I mentioned also the seniors in Tucson. That's a problem also down in Green Valley, and I was surprised to hear that. I was talking to Jan Lesher from the county a while back, and she had just left a meeting down south in Green Valley where they are having a homeless population among seniors. And so my question was, how does that work? Well, if you're in a second marriage, just by way of example, if you're in a second marriage and your spouse dies and he or she never quite fixed the will and all the assets are going to that first spouse, now all of a sudden you're a homeless person. You can have a catastrophic illness that your insurance doesn't cover, and all of a sudden you're a homeless person.
Yeah, that's a good
point.
This
is a huge issue.
Yeah,
absolute huge issue.
And we'll bring that up with Jan Lesher. Jan will be my Friday Focus interview on Friday at noon. Steve Kosacek, I think we've cleared up Chuck's question. Thanks to Tom Fairbanks for bringing this up to my attention. Pima County Board of Supervisors passed a motion to provide more security to employees. Pima County and the city of Tucson will be hiring 4 people to escort the county and city workers who need to get to their cars after dark. The project's cost is about $500,000 and will be shared by the two governments.
Okay,
so there
well,
you go.
We haven't voted on that yet, and so downtown we've seen some significant revitalization, but we also have a population downtown that is making it fairly unsafe in the dark hours of the night. And so, if you're working downtown and you're getting off at 10:30, 11 o'clock, or in one of the you know, one of the office areas that people, and believe it or not, we do have city workers who are working late hours. I'm one of them. So
there you go.
We, you know, it is absolutely important to make sure people have a safe way to get to their vehicles in the downtown core. We haven't voted on that yet, but that's not RTA dollars. Those are probably going to be coming out of ARPA dollars, the Recovery Act, American Recovery Act dollars. But yeah, I've not seen that. We have a meeting coming up on November the 14th, and so that may be on our agenda for then.
All right, Steve Kasachek, it's always a pleasure, and I probably will not be speaking with you before Thanksgiving, so I hope you have a wonderful holiday.
You too, you and your bride, and make sure that you eat hearty.
we always rise to that occasion, for sure.
Okay,
Steve Kasachek,
thank
you very much. All right, coming up next, UA climate scientist Dr. Zach Guido is in the house, and Zach will be with me after we take the break on the Buckmaster Show. The mid-show break, CBS Network News, and then we'll hear from the great Buckmaster Show sponsors.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com. For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rialto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. We love Green Things. They're in their 51st year, maybe at least 50, and going strong. 13-acre site over at 3384 East River Road by the Rialto River. This is a perfect time of year to put some color in the backyard garden, and thinking ahead to the first freeze, which may not be that far away. It's been a very strange kind of autumn season. Temperatures could be in the upper 30s, actually, in the next couple of days here in Tucson. But so think about stuff that will survive the winter, and Green Things Associates will be more than happy to point you in the right direction. GreenThingsAZ.com, their sister business on site is Zocalo Village. Beautiful merchandise, including Talavera pottery imported from Mexico, and some beautiful dining room sets handcrafted in mesquite wood, and really nice work that the craftsmen do, that they handle just such beautiful material at Zocalo Village. Their website is zocalovillage.com. All right, let's welcome now back to the show Dr. Zach Guido, the Buckmaster Show contributor on climate. Dr. Guido is an assistant research professor at the Arizona Institute for Resilience in the Environment and Society, known as ARES. Did I get that? Did I get it?
You got it close enough.
Yeah. It's not resilience or resilient.
It's the Arizona Institute for Resilient Environments and Societies.
Environments is plural.
Yes.
And so is societies. Yep. Okay. Acronym is ARES, and it's basically a inner working group coordinating a bunch of different interdisciplinary folks on the faculty, student, and projects across the UA campus, from climate science to public policy, law, the arts, water resources, and beyond. I was saying, as you heard me during the commercial, it's been kind of a weird fall. The traditional monsoon, which was quite robust for 2 years in a row, ends September the 30th. Things really start to dry out, as you know, into October and in November. This year's been different. There's been like a chance of rain almost every 7 day forecast has had that chance, including tomorrow we're going to get some. And we've already had some really cool mornings.
Yeah, so October was fascinating. And I guess the first thing to say is that September 30th date for the end of the monsoon, like, that's just something that we've imposed on the monsoon season, just to communicate it easier. Same with the beginning of it, June 15th, right? Like, but the monsoon can come or leave later than that. It often doesn't. You know, we've bracketed it June 15th and September 30th because most of the monsoon moisture and most of the monsoon storms and like the phenomenon, like the way that precipitation is sort of generated, happens in that window. But this year was different. In fact, that monsoon moisture, which was so present the entire season, and one of the reasons why it was a very robust season, as it was last year, sort of hung around. And then the dynamics changed a little bit, but that moisture was still there. So we had these low pressure systems that sort of wafted in from the northwest, that then churned up that moisture that was left over from the monsoon and really fired off what looked a lot like the convective storms that we see during the summer. And I was getting, you know, phone calls and texts being like, is the monsoon still going?
Yeah.
And like, yeah, technically it is, because the moisture that was around was, you know, from the monsoon season.
Like a monsoon leftover season.
Yeah. But yeah, won't go in the historic
books
because, you know, we sort of bracket the monsoon season to June 15th to September 30th. But that was a nice treat. And, you know, October often brings what we call, a transition season. So, you know, the monsoon circulation, we're more under easterly flow. So the prevailing sort of storm direction comes from the east. It's not always the case because the monsoon's very variable. But, you know, in the winter, we're sort of under the we're under the westerlies. And then in between that transition season, you can have the sort of position of the high pressure ridge sort of wobble north and south. And, you know, if it's north, we're under easterly, and if it's south, we're under westerly, and we call that sort of a transition season. And so it is a pretty variable month in terms of rainfall, that can, you know, have, you know, duds, you know, but it can also bring quite a bit of storms.
So the transition has begun with the westerlies, which will be bringing in, I understand, this weather system that's coming in. It will be more of a westerly system coming from the northwest.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, that's just like, this is now what we're going to experience going forward into the winter, is like our predominant storm systems will sort of bend from the Pacific Northwest, or even more a little bit south of that. You know, we're in a La Nina event. When we're in a El Nino event, we might get storms that sort of take a, you know, people have heard like Pineapple Express, for example, and and the position of the jet changes, jet stream, the fast flowing winds in the atmosphere. That position changes generally in an El Nino versus La Nina, and an El Nino brings sort of more southerly position of the jet, and La Nina, like we're in now for the third winter in a row.
That's unusual.
Which is unusual. Yeah. We can talk about that in a minute.
Yeah.
That the position of the jet is more northerly, and so when we do get storms, they sort of take a bend down from the Pacific Northwest and loop around and into our area and can bring those low pressure systems that generate rainfall.
And the good news is that the La Nina, good news for the Pacific Northwest and for Northern California, they've already had the first major snow event this week. Up in the Pacific Northwest, Montana had a big storm. The Sierra Nevada got a pretty good storm. It's the time of year where chains are required over the Truckee Pass going over to Tahoe. That happened yesterday. So this is good. Last year, it was a very slow and kind of a late start for the snow season.
Right, and I think you bring up a good point here. Last year was also a La Nina, and historically speaking, if you look at all the La Ninas that we have good data on and go back and sort of look at the general patterns, La Ninas, you get sort of wetter conditions in the Pacific Northwest and then drier conditions down in the Southwest. And the sort of flip side happens during El Nino events. But those are sort of aggregate totals. There's a lot of variability, year-to-year variability. So it doesn't always play out that way. And there can be quite a lot of variability for when the storms actually happen and so forth. So it is good to recognize that, you know, as a climate scientist, like it, particularly in the Southwest, like one of the largest predictors of what the winter weather will be like is what goes on in the tropical Pacific Ocean, this El Nino, La Nina, or we call the El Nino Southern Oscillation phenomenon. But it's not explanatory, definitively explanatory. There's a whole bunch of other things going on. So you always have to take what's going on in the tropical Pacific Ocean with a little bit of a grain of salt, recognizing that that the atmosphere is a very complicated system, and it's coupled with the land, it's coupled with the ocean, and it depends on what's going upstream, and it acts as a system. And so it's quite difficult to parse out. The winter started already in the Pacific Northwest, mm-hmm. and as you said, that's a good thing.
And the presence of La Nina was very much on the mind of the climate scientists at the Climate Prediction Center at the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, known as NOAA, for their forecast for now November, which we're in, December and January. And so the word is the southern half, our half of the western United States, would be a drier situation. And the northern area, as we've just been articulating, would be wetter, and it's already begun.
Right. And so those seasonal forecasts, there's a lot of nuance to them. And they're largely reflecting what I just talked about. But there's other things that they're using. They're not just doing eyeball regressions between what's going on in the tropical Pacific Ocean and our area. There's a whole bunch of things, variables that are included into their models, and they run these dynamical weather system, climate system models, and generate a lot of different futures runs, they call them simulations, and then they have a bunch of sort of different conditions and possible evolutions, and then they look at the statistics and they package them into these probabilistic forecasts, which are largely what, you know, climate forecasts look like. They're chances. So in the forecast that you just read off, mm-hmm. there is a slightly greater chance mm-hmm. that conditions will be drier than average here Southwest, but it's not like, you know, a 90% chance. It's probably more on the order of, it's complicated.
It's a dartboard.
Yeah. They break it up into like these three tiers.
Yeah.
Right. So it's actually these things called tercile forecasts. So it's actually a really hard thing to, to articulate. But the point is it's a slight lean toward being drier than average conditions, and that aligns with the historical data.
All right, we'll take a break right here. Dr. Zach Guido will be back with me after the break, and we'll be talking about some really a rare occurrence that is happening in the Atlantic Basin that folks may not have heard about. We'll be right back.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the DoubleTree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com. Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Delivering a $2 billion voter-approved regional transportation plan involves complex policy, legal, and financial matters. The Regional Transportation Authority is open to answering any questions you have about delivery of the current RTA 20-year plan or about the development of a new regional transportation plan for the next 20 years. Contact the RTA at info@rtamobility.com.
Have you always wanted to cruise to Alaska? If that's the case, then you'll only see the tip of the iceberg. At Bon Voyage Travel, we can package the full Alaska experience with a cruise tour. Journey to Denali National Park on glass-domed rail cars. Tour the tundra wilderness and see the northern lights with an expert guide. And of course, relax on your cruise as you enjoy the glaciers up close and personal. Go to bvtravel.com today. Bon Voyage Travel, your Alaska experts.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Welcome back. It is Buckmaster Midweek Edition. If you're thinking of, you know, I just got to get away, I want to get in the car, get in the truck, and do something this weekend, a three-hour drive east of Tucson will put you in the Silver City, Grant County, New Mexico area. There's a lot to do over there. This is a perfect time of year in New Mexico. Hiking in the Gila National Wilderness is always high on the agenda when you're over there. A visit to the world-famous Cliff Dwellings National Monument, just a good place to get away and kind of unwind. Their website is southwestnewmexico.org. Spell out Southwest and New Mexico, then .org. Listing great places to stay and so many activities in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. Dr. Zach Guido, our Buckmaster Show contributor on climate, assistant research professor at the Arizona Institute for Resilient Environments and Societies, known as ARES, is with us. What's going on now in the Atlantic is it's really rare. We've got two hurricanes at the same time in November. Normally, it's one hurricane will pop up, one named storm, to put it that way, in November. In fact, this has only happened twice before where you had two named or two hurricanes in November. You got Lisa about ready to slam into Belize in Central America. And then you have Martin, which is kind of to the northeast of Bermuda, probably won't impact Bermuda, but it may go all the way up and get caught up in that area north, way north in the Atlantic, and wind up over the British Isles. Then there is a low pressure system near the Bahamas. So that there's a 1 in 5 chance that that could turn into a named storm. So then you might have three named storms in November, which would really be weird. The climate calendar is really changing.
Yeah, it is remarkable that these hurricanes are forming in, as you said, in November. We tend to think, I mean, if you look at the height of the hurricane season, it tends to be in, you know, August, September, early part of October. It's not unprecedented that you have hurricanes lasting this long, but one thing that you would want to pay attention to is the sea surface temperatures and how warm they are, because that's really what's fueling these hurricanes. So warmer sea surface temperatures will, you know, lead to greater chances of hurricane formation and strength, and also duration. So I haven't checked what those sea surface temperature patterns look like, but I would also say that, you know, as we sort of march along and steadily are affected by, you know, global climate change, like the main expression of that is, you know, warming temperatures. And a lot of that heat that we're generating through, you know, trapping heat in the atmosphere is actually going into the oceans. And so the oceans are warming up. And so one might expect, and I believe the people that, you know, spend their career studying hurricanes, hurricane dynamics, and whatnot, feel fairly confident that, you know, a warming world will generate, like, changing in the seasonality of, extending of the seasonality of hurricanes, something like what we're seeing now. Like, I'm not sure I would say that, you know, without looking at the sea surface temperature patterns, I don't know to what extent they're warmer than average at the moment. But the analogy is like what we're experiencing here in the Southwest, which is that, you know, with an earlier end to our winter,
yes,
we're just expanding our dry season,
yes,
and that's consequently leading to greater fire risk, or a greater time in which that landscape can dry out. So there's, and we would expect changes to happen the climate system is set up to move energy around. That's fundamentally what it's doing. And so when you're changing the energy balance in the atmosphere, you're expecting all sorts of changes. And that's really what climate science is trying to do. It's like, well, it's trying to understand, well, what are the patterns and what may be the explanations for those patterns. But one thing that we know for certain is that we expect changes, and this could be one of them.
And that was one of the things that was talked about many years ago by your former colleague, Jonathan Overpeck, about the extension of seasons. When we were up in Alberta at Lake Louise and Banff in early October, I was listening to a climate scientist, would have been one of your colleagues in the profession, from the University of British Columbia, talking about this extension of season has really happened 20 years before they thought, up in British Columbia anyway, where they were getting in October temperatures that would be more indicative of late August. For instance, the autumn leaves, when we were up there, were peaking.
Right.
That was in early October. That shouldn't happen that late. Normally, that would peak actually a little bit mid-September, you would have the peak. So that's coming later.
Well, I find this really interesting. Like, a lot of, like, the ecology work and biology work that look at the sensitivity of different, you know, plants and animal, they're much more like, I can't feel a 1 degree temperature change. It was warmer than average in Arizona this last month, but like, you, I didn't notice it.
You couldn't tell.
But there are cues in the environment that are really sensitive to just small changes, and it's like trying to understand how things are going on. And to your point about like that climate scientist,
mm-hmm. yes.
thinking that change is happening at a much more rapid pace.
Yeah,
I think a lot of those kinds of observations are happening. And I think one point that gets lost is that a lot of times science is mostly is a conservative pursuit. That is like the conclusions that are drawn, like there's high bar for statistical significance, right? And there's high bar for being able to report on observations that you feel confident in. And so a lot of the work that has gone into this climate science and other environmental change science has maybe underreported some of the impacts.
Let's see if we can squeeze in a quick comment from a listener. Go ahead, David.
One of the things that's overlooked is the Amazon forest is being destroyed at a speed of blow your socks off. And it is the second largest carbon sink, and it's eliminated. It's going to have dire effect on the climate, very dire effect.
The Amazon he's talking about, and that's a huge issue. Go ahead, Zach.
Yeah, I mean, I think that...
They've had a change in direction with governments down there, and I understand the man that has been reelected would be a little more environmentally friendly. I know that's probably a generalization, but...
Well, there are these... hot spots on Earth that are immensely important for our environmental system that regulate the planet. And the Amazon, I mean, it's been called the lungs of the planet. There's a huge amount of biodiversity down there. There's a huge amount of vegetation that is helping to, suck up some of the CO2. And so it becomes a really important area to conserve. And of course, it has global importance, but it's obviously sovereign in Brazil, and there's other considerations that they have to weigh, development and whatnot. I agree. I mean, the Amazon is an important part, and we should globally do our best to try to protect these places, but they're elsewhere as well.
All right, Dr. Zach Guido, always a pleasure. Thank you, Zach. We'll see you in December. Okay.
Thank you.
All right. That's going to do it for the Buckmaster Show. On behalf of Dr. Zach Guido and Tom Fairbanks, engineering and producing our program, Bill Buckmaster saying stick around. A lot of good talk coming up, especially about talk about your money. Dave Ramsey's very popular show comes up right after CBS Network News. Hope you have a great afternoon.